This is MSO News Sports, and we are joined by State Rep Dan Cahill from Lynn. And Dan, welcome. Thanks so much for joining us.
Bill, it is always a pleasure being on your show. Hello, everybody in Radio Land.
And it is fantastic having you here. Well, I don't know where to begin, but I think the fact that you're the chair of a joint committee on environment and natural resources, I think that's newsworthy. So let's go there. Tell us about that committee. What's happening with that, and what can you share with us?
Well, thanks, Bill. I was fortunate enough to have Speaker Ron Mariano appoint me at the beginning of the session to the Joint Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. It used to include agriculture, but we spun that off to its own committee because farming and sustainability in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is in and of itself an important topic and one that deserves a committee that focuses solely on it. But there's so much going on in our environment. Where to begin? We are dealing with climate change issues. We're dealing with capacity for trash and refuse that we're facing in the next couple of years. Now and the next couple of years, we're dealing with rising sea tides. We're dealing with what to deal with all the plastics and cardboard and trash that we have. Anything from animals to animals to trees to horseshoe crabs was in the news today in the Globe. We've been dealing with horseshoe crabs. So I deal with a myriad of issues. It's very exciting. Happy to talk about a few. I think for this legislative session, the big topics are plastic and the use of plastic, whether it be for single-use plastic bottles, plastic bags, plastic straws, plastic everything, and what to do with it. We have some legislation, a lot of different bills in front of us, probably the biggest topic of conversation for bills filed by other legislators was around this issue. And committee took some really good testimony this year. We've heard from advocates, we've heard from haulers, we've heard from producers. And I'm hopeful that we can put together and craft legislation that aims at trying to reduce our reliance on plastics, also ensuring that these products are being recycled and especially not thrown out into the environment like we have seen on our roadways and bridges and sidewalks. It drives me crazy going down some of these highways and streets and seeing all this trash everywhere. But we're dealing with that, and we're taking a hard look because that's something that impacts our future. We're also looking at extended producer responsibility bills. They're called EPR bills, and that's legislation that says the producers of products, mainly especially like paint, you know, everyone's got house paint, right? I have like 15 to 20 cans that have accumulated over the years of paint in my basement. And if you're like me, it drives you crazy, but there's ways to get rid of it, but it's not easy. We're looking at legislation that would make it easy so you could actually recycle this paint, bring it back to your local hardware store or bigger box store, and they'll take the paint. They'll actually recycle paint. I didn't know you could do that. You could recycle paint, take old colors, mix it up, create new colors, create new paint, and the cans you can reuse and recycle too. And then mattresses. I feel like I could take a nap on any street corner in an urban area in the city because state because there's just people are discarding mattresses because they're becoming harder and harder to discard. So we're trying to tweak the mattress recycling program to make it so consumers can more easily get rid of discarded and old mattresses instead of them just driving down the street late at night and tossing it over the side of a pickup truck. That's what we're doing with our committee, Bill.
Well, that's a wide range of topics. But you bring up a good. I mean, now when I walk around the beach, for example, you see trash, and sometimes when I see paper, I'm less worried about that than the plastics. You're right, just crazy. But there's so much plastics, I think we've come a ways with that in the last few years. But obviously, so much more to do for sure. But tell me the mattress thing here, just for our listeners. You know, the trash haulers no longer will take mattresses, right? Is that the deal? And so that's why they're out on the street now, right?
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, there was a law passed for banning mattresses from the waste stream. So you couldn't stick them in landfills anymore and things like that. The goal was to have them recyclable because mattresses are like nearly entirely recyclable. And as a result, there was like one or two nonprofits that recycled it in Massachusetts, but then private industry has now come to the table and realized, hey, there's some money in this. But it's going to take a little while for this program to get off the ground. So in the meantime, people being people, they have these mattresses. Obviously, you cannot resell mattresses or reuse them. That's prohibited. So they toss them outside. They toss them by either they put them by their trash, not realizing it doesn't get picked up, or they go find a dumpster, or they find a dark place, and they dump their mattress on the ground. Now, we're trying to prevent that because, again, they're highly recyclable, but not when they're just thrown out all over the place where we have to collect them. So we're looking at an EPR for mattresses where there could be a fee of point of purchase. And, you know, when you're buying a mattress, they're fairly expensive, but we can work to make sure that low-income folks aren't harmed. But when you're buying some of these mattresses, you look on online, they're like $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. It's crazy.
Yeah,
I didn't realize like what a fair fee would be. I don't know, $25, $50, something. It's not going to be massive. To go to a program to make it easier for folks to have that recycled, whether it's picked up at point of delivery of a new mattress, or we incentivize private industry to go and pick these things up.
Right. Yeah, that seems like it makes sense. If you buy a mattress, the people that sell it to you can take the other one, and they'd be well and, you know, capable of doing the right thing to recycle it, I would think, you know?
Sometimes folks don't know. It's funny. I can learn through like the bottle bill and all these EPR bills, is that a lot of companies are set up for one way delivery. They make the product, they sell the product, they deliver the product, and a lot of them aren't set up to take the product back. You know, that's usually the job of haulers, mm-hmm. and trash collecting companies. So we're trying to kind of get their mindsets in that you need to think as a company. When your product is done and used for, like car batteries, tea, electronics, mattresses, paint, what's the end life look like? And they need to come to the table and figure out, like, you know, you're kind of responsible for the creation and sale of these products. You got to be responsible for the discarding and recycling of it as well.
All right. So, like usual, Dan, you're setting me straight. So, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm taking it well, by the way. You know. But
sleep easy tonight, Bill, on your very nice, expensive mattress. Just don't throw it out the window.
I know. All right. How about speaking of mattresses, let's go to housing. What do we know about housing? What's the latest news on housing? Is there things happening at the State House on housing?
That's like almost, that takes up all the oxygen in the room. I saw a report, I forget where it was from yesterday, saying that we have Massachusetts has the fifth tightest real estate market right now, which is true. We have also the most expensive housing market in the country. So we are in a total crunch. We have a lack of stock that is for sale. We have plenty of folks looking for either emergency housing, temporary housing, or just affordable housing. When I say affordable housing, you know, that's like one of those buzzwords that people don't really know the definition of. They'll say, oh, affordable housing is something with a voucher. Not necessarily. Affordable housing is housing that is essentially restricted to a certain price point, and it is affordable based on a certain area median income, which a lot of cities and towns are now redoing their zoning to include something called inclusionary zoning that says new developments must include a certain amount of affordable units that are deed restricted to a certain area median income, AMI. And then there's just like affordable income, an average person saying, man, what can I afford? And none of these options are very affordable. So there's a housing bond bill that's coming out of the House, we suspect the next month or two, that was, you know, the governor filed their housing bond bill. We're taking a look at it next. There's going to be some great programming and funding in there for development, looking at incentivizing developers, private developers, to creating more stock. It is not easy because prices are sky high. So construction costs have gone up 30-40% in the last 5 years. So no one's penciling out. Only way to pencil out a project is to increase rent. So in order to prevent that, government has to come to the table and offer incentives. And that be low interest loans. Mass Development's really good at partnering with banks and providing reasonably affordable loan products. Also, continuing to tackle the issue of local zoning bylaws and rules that may be overly restricted to dense multifamily developments, especially if you're seeing the MBTA Community Act kind of playing out and how some cities and towns are interpreting that and the state's interpreting that. And really the goal is to increase stock around public transportation because the goal is, well, increase stock near public transportation. People are using the bus, they're using the trolley, they're using the subway, they're using the commuter rail. Less cars, less congestion. So with housing, we need more public housing, we need more private housing, we need more affordable housing, we need housing all over the place. I would take any unit right now because any unit that's new today is freeing up an existing unit tomorrow.
So, Dan, let me ask you this. There has been a lot of additional housing units, if you will, in Lynn, right, in the last, let's say, 5 years or a decade. Maybe detail that for us or put that into context, whether I'm right or wrong on that.
You're 100% correct. Lynn was ahead of its time going back a couple, over 10, 15 years ago. The city looked at its downtown and decided to relax zoning in it to allow mixed-use buildings by right. When Senator Crichton and Representative Capano and I were on the city council, we further incentivized developers to come to Lynn. No setbacks, no sidelines in the central business district, no parking requirements, and it resulted in some significant developments and continues to create new projects on a daily basis. And we were able to get the MBTA to reconstruct the commuter rail in the downtown. It was dilapidated. It was underused. They're divesting $100 million in that, and that project's ongoing because that's critical to our downtown. But it's kind of like the Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. But if you set the ground rules in an area that could withstand significant density, and then you allow private industry to come in and do so in public, because we have a pretty robust nonprofit and government kind of partnered quasi-public agencies that do infill housing, that take brownfields and create them and dedicate them to affordable units. You can really build, and that's what we've been undergoing the last 15 years, really 20 years, and it's worked out well for Lynn. The mayor, Nicholson, in his first year, newly elected in the city council, passed inclusionary zoning, so any new development, 10% must be a deed restricted. 10% of all new units must be deed restricted for someone who qualifies for the unit, and they qualify by making their income being 60% of the area median income in AMI. So that's that's affordable. We're seeing a real need for affordability in the 40% AMI. Those folks typically, they're working, they don't qualify for any type of RAFT or rental assistance or programs, but then they don't make enough money to really pay market rate rent. So we're trying to reach down to those groups because they're just working and they're trying to make ends meet. And when you really should be paying like 20% of your income towards housing, but you're paying 60% towards your housing, how can you afford it and do anything else? How can you raise a family on that? You can't.
No, excellent. And a good, that's the issue to recognize for sure. That's what you want to encourage, actually. You're absolutely, in my opinion. All right, Dan, I'm going to ask you to wrap it up here. Not because you're going too long, but no, I have one more topic I want to talk to you about, and that would be politics. Now, your colleague, you just mentioned Peter Capano just a moment ago, former city councilor, but current state rep, is stepping down. So his seat is open, and I understand you've got Hong Net, city councilor at large, and Sean Reed, new of the school committee, are both seeking that seat. Anyone else?
Well, I don't know of anyone else. The bad news is we're losing Peter, and Representative Capano and I and Brennan Crichton, the senator, have been working together in local and state government now for, I hate to say it, like 20 years. We work incredibly well together. Which probably, I don't know if you really find this in politics these days, we're actual friends. Like, we're not.
No, come on. You know, you're just saying that, right? You're, you know, seriously, right?
Guys, great. Oh, no, no. We're like, we'll hang out. And so it's sad to lose Peter. He's been an amazing colleague. He's done so much for the city that people don't even know. He's quiet at times on some of the things he does. And he's somebody who, at his core, just helps people. So it's a loss of the delegation. The good news is we have a strong bench in Lynn of folks who are public service oriented, and we have Councilor Hongnett, who Brendan and Senator Crichton and I have served with on the City Council for many years in the past, and newly elected to the school committee, Sean Reed, who's been, I've known him since he was in high school. Fortunately, both excellent candidates. I'm excited to see how this, you know, their race unfolds. They're both very good people in the sense that, you know, I don't expect mudslinging at all. This is, if anyone wants to see how real politics should be working, come to Lynn, because we base it on ideas and abilities. It's not mudslinging. It's not attacking. It's not, you know, I'm going to give you a reason not to vote for the other person instead of giving you a reason to vote for your, you know, themselves. They're both very kind, very thoughtful. I look forward to working with either of them. I think they'll fit in very well in the House. I think they'll be very successful. I think this is the field so far. You know, you never know. Somebody else could get in the field. It's getting a little late. Signatures are due by the end of April. But I anticipate both these guys to be hardworking, pounding the doors all summer and fall, and having really, really quality campaign and material coming out.
And so, and the point being here, too, is that the primary is in September, so this is coming up fast, and that's the really more or less the deciding moment in a race like this is the primary.
Yeah. Yes, they're both Democrats. We have the Republican Party hasn't fielded a candidate in this race. I don't anticipate them doing that. This is a heavily Democratic district, and we have a Republican colleague in our delegation, Representative Wong. We work really well with him as well, and you'll find that the Lynn delegation, including Representative Armini, who is in her first term, we really do partner together and work together, and we find that that is the best way to serve our constituents, working as a team, collaborating on issues. There's no one who's trying to grab the microphone or you know, all the attention. We really, really work hard in making sure that we are all involved in things that are happening, not just in our districts, but across the city.
No one's grabbing the microphone. Damn, maybe you just don't notice it because you have it. You know what I mean? You know?
No, I try not. I tell the same tired old jokes, Bill. No one wants to listen to my stuff anymore.
No.
I need new material.
I thought you were talking about me. Okay, fair enough. Okay. But anyway, Dan, thanks so much for your time. Always enjoy talking with you, and keep up the great work, and hopefully we will talk again soon.
Bill, you're the best, and thank you so much to you and your listeners for giving me some time today.
You got it. Dan Cahill, State Rep, City of Lynn, here on MSONewsSports.com.